upholding scientific research and discovery in respect, as we should, we must also be alert to the equal and opposite danger that public policy could itself become the captive of a scientific, technological elite.
We've signed a climate convention on the importance of economic instruments and free markets. Were included in this mammoth Agenda 21 document and the Rio Declaration. Now, let me be clear on one fundamental point. The United States fully intends to be the world's preeminent leader in protecting the global environment.
Coming up, Technocracy News. Greetings, Patrick Wood here for Technocracy News and Trends, Editor-in-Chief. One more day and one more episode of Technocracy News and Trends. Today we're going to start out talking about Amazon again and its Ring cameras that Amazon is intent on creating a surveillance network with across the country. And the title of this story is Party Hardy, How Amazon Sells Ring Cameras to Police Departments. Now, this is interesting because, as you know, Amazon and Ring are non-state actors. They are not connected with any government in any way. They are not government. They are not elected by government. They're not appointed by government to do a thing. They are a private company in every way. And yet, Jeff Bezos and Ring have a vision for America to be a completely surveilled police state. This is absolutely clear in the way that they are going about selling their merchandise to police departments around the country. We've had a couple of articles previously in recent months on the Ring camera debacle and how it's affecting law enforcement around the country. In a nutshell, the Ring doorbell cameras that consumers put on their porch to take videos of people who approach their door. Of course, there is a doorbell on it as well, and you can press the button and it will ring a doorbell inside your house. But basically, it's a camera surveillance system that lets you know who's on your porch, when they came, etc. And ostensibly, you might catch people who are stealing packages from your porch during Christmas season and so on. At least that's the rationale for a lot of people who originally purchased the Ring doorbell camera. When I first saw it some time ago, before this all took place, I was excited to see it. I thought, that's an interesting product. I could have a lot of use. But now Amazon has brought out their true colors because they're spreading it to police departments around the country. Then they built an app for it that runs on a smartphone. And people can download the app that by the Ring camera. And everything that gets recorded on the Ring camera sent into the cloud can then be accessed by the app that you have on your smartphone. So you can see all of the video footage that has been generated from your camera. So this particular app now has been connected in with police departments around the country so that the police departments can see the video that you have on your Ring doorbell. So if a crime was committed in the neighborhood, all they have to do is go up and down the virtual street with all of the footage created by the various Ring cameras, and they can get pictures of people who might have committed a crime. And of course, they get pictures of everybody else in the neighborhood as well. And this is part of the surveillance problem and the privacy problem that many people are just completely upset with. I wrote at the beginning of this article, Jeff Bezos is the richest technocrat in the world, and he is absolutely intent on creating the ultimate surveillance state by partnering civilians with police departments. Sales tactics include free booze, free food, and free Ring cameras. What drives Bezos to create a snitch culture? Well, it is in perfect harmony with technocracy, which requires total surveillance, constant monitoring, and ubiquitous command and control. If left unchecked, Bezos would turn the whole world into an experience similar to an Amazon warehouse. The article states, Amazon surveillance company has seeped into hundreds of American communities by throwing parties for police and giving them free devices. Ring likes to throw bangers for police, that's parties. Here's what you find at a Ring party. Open bar, free food, live music, a special recognition ceremony, free Ring doorbells, a live viewing of Shark Tank, the show that launched what would become Ring, and to which company founder Jamie Siminoff eventually returned as a shark, and most importantly, an appearance from retired basketball player Shaquille O'Neal. You could find all this at a private party that Ring hosted for police at the 2018 International Association of Chiefs of Police Conference in Orlando. Ring threw a similar party on IACP weekend this year, this time in Chicago, including appearances by both Shaq and Siminoff, according to an event invitation obtained by Motherboard, that's Vice, using a Freedom of Information request. So this wasn't publicly made known initially. It required a FOIA request to find it out. The invitation notes that firearms are strictly prohibited. Ring, a company that has hosted at least one company party where employees wore F-crime, I won't say the word, shirts, T-shirts, and racist costumes of Native and Indigenous Americans, according to new images reviewed by Motherboard, wants to brand itself a friend of police, the antidote to fear of crime, and a proponent of law and order. Events like these seem to have a positive effect. Emails after the 2018 Ring Party show, for example, that senior police leadership were enticed by the idea of free stuff. Well, of course they'd be enticed by free stuff. Who wouldn't? They get a free meal, free beer, or whatever else they're drinking, and they get free Ring cameras. They can use those for whatever they want. Take them home and put them on their own house, I suppose, or give them away as door prizes to consumers in the area. The deputy and the chief signed up to go to the party with Shaq, a Haverhill, Massachusetts police officer, told a Ring representative in an email. But I guess the lines were really long, and so the deputy got an email for a free Ring doorbell, only the chief did not get his, was wondering if you know of why only one did and not the other. Regarding the free doorbell, to get the email, you had to have RSVP'd for the event, the Ring representative said. What does the chief want? I'll send it. Ring's efforts to woo police aren't limited to lavish parties. The company offers police officers $50 off Ring products if their department partners with Ring. Those from departments that don't partner with Ring can get discounts too. If Ring can sell an inviting brand image, police are more likely to trust the company. That trust is a crucial foundation for its partnership with police, which have quietly proliferated since 2016, usually without public input. Now here is a key tell in this story, by the way. Without public input. This program has only been around for 3 years. It was never put to any type of public debate whatsoever, but Amazon simply went out behind the scenes, started throwing parties and incentives for the police to get involved. And now that they are involved with several hundred departments around our country, it's too late to roll it back. The article continues, Ring has over 600 partnerships with law enforcement agencies around the country, and this number is increasing daily. The company has spent the last 3 years systematically making sure police everywhere know and recognize Ring, quietly building a nationwide surveillance network through police partnerships and embedding itself into the functions of law enforcement. This network of police partnerships isn't only unusual because of its size and scope. Behind the scenes, Ring is experimenting with emerging technologies as well as pursuing a partnership with at least one other private surveillance company. The number of Ring partnerships with police grows almost daily, and to date, there have been limited public debate about whether these partnerships should exist in the first place. Unless lawmakers curb or regulate the expansion of these partnerships, what we are seeing now is just a minuscule version of the company's full potential. Time out again. What Amazon essentially is doing with police departments is creating a public-private partnership. That is, where private industry bonds together with a government entity for a particular project. The fact that Amazon is using free stuff to get customers doesn't mean that it gets nothing in return. Of course it does. It gets mammoth amounts of data as well. And that data is unaccounted for. They get the data, and the data has value, as we already all know. Data is indeed the new oil of the 21st century. The article continues, Motherboard has examined tens of thousands of pages of documents obtained via public records requests from more than 90 cities that have partnered with Ring. They describe the typical relationship as a simple transaction. Police get a portal where they can request footage from Ring's network of private surveillance cameras, and the company gets the promotional muscle of the police. In order to entice police departments into partnering with the company, Ring often tells police the number of Ring camera owners and Neighbors app users in their jurisdiction. Sometimes the company provides active camera maps showing where camera owners live. Time out again. Here's another big red flag. So in some cases, Ring is actually providing the location of where the Ring cameras have been installed and activated around their jurisdiction. It continues, Ring also offers police access to Law Enforcement Neighborhood Portal, an interactive map that allows police to request camera footage directly from camera owners. Until July, their approximate location was shown. These owners can choose to share some, all, or none of their footage with police. Police do not need a warrant in order to request camera footage from residents. The portal also includes a case management tool in which videos associated with an investigation are sorted into groups based on case number. If someone refuses to provide footage to police, all police need to do is reach out to Ring. According to a memo obtained from the police department in Pomona, California, when camera owners are, quote, uncooperative or unavailable, officers are instructed to contact Ring and request that the captured video be preserved. In exchange for all of this, police have to promote Ring. Some partnerships, like those in Lakeland, Florida, and Anne Arundel County, Maryland, explicitly require police to encourage adoption of Ring cameras and Ring's free app, Neighbors. Ring has told police that the more people download Neighbors, the more the Law Enforcement Neighborhoods portal grows in value. These cities receive up to 40 seed cameras, free Ring devices they can raffle off or give away to city residents. When police share a download link to Neighbors, they can receive even more free cameras. Ring representatives have encouraged police to post on social media often in order to drive downloads to your unique link and receive free Ring cameras as a reward. So you see, the bribery works in both directions. First, the lever is established with the police department by giving them free stuff, inviting them to parties, plying them with food and with booze, and then giving them free stuff to give away. And once the police department has signed the contract, so to speak, to receive the portal, then they're required to go out and actually market to the consumer for Ring. And we already know if you go to Lowe's or to Costco, you'll see Ring cameras there on display, but you don't usually see a lot of people standing around staring at them just thinking, boy, I'd sure like to have one of those. Not really. Of course, they sell them or they wouldn't have them there. But in order to drive demand for Ring, they're using the police department as their sales force. Is this legal? Is this ethical? I'm not sure that it is, honestly. If you have a product to sell, you should sell it yourself. I don't think a private entity should be soliciting a public entity to go sell its wares to the public. That's their responsibility, not the police department's. Well, this story is going to be a big thing as it grows from here. I don't know where it'll end, but this is technocracy at work, and Amazon is making sure that it's embedding itself into the law enforcement community around the country, and the level of embedding is really deep. The next story has to do with the United Nations and climate agenda again, and of course, you remember that COP25 is taking place right now in Barcelona, Spain. We talked about that yesterday. Well, another professor has come out and opened his mouth about what he thinks the future of the United Nations is vis-a-vis climate change. I wrote at the top of this article, speaking of the 2011 Greek crisis, this professor says, these were decisions that were made for them, and then they just had to have a more or less technocratic government and get through it. Now, the United Nations is in the same predicament, with nations not adopting its bogus climate change agenda. This gives expression to Al Gore's statement, deniers deserve to be punished. And if you don't remember what happened to Greece in 2011, they indeed did have a financial crisis on the heels of the global financial meltdown in 2008 and 9. That was called the Great Recession in the United States. And Greece, financially speaking, absolutely hit the wall. So did Italy. And what the EU did at that point was they sent in two unelected technocrats to take over in those countries. In both cases, they were members of the Trilateral Commission as well. And they called them technocrats because they were fixers. They were the ones who were going to turn their economy around and simply make decisions for the public that were good for them. Nobody voted for them to come in. They were appointments by the EU. And the people of those countries had to smile and say, how high do you want us to jump? Well, that's how Greece solved its problem, and Italy too. And eventually those people left office and they had regular elections and got somebody else in. This article states, action to address climate change has been left so late that any political response will likely become an international security issue and could threaten democracy. That's the view of Ole Weaver, a prominent international relations professor at the University of Copenhagen, who also says climate inaction could lead to armed conflict. Now, again, I'll point out this is no slouch basement blogger, as some people are referred to. This is a prominent professor at University of Copenhagen. At some point, the whole climate debate is going to tip over, he tells RN's Late Night Live. The current way we talk about climate is one side and the other side. One side is those who want to do something, and the other is the deniers who say we shouldn't do anything. He believes that quite soon, another battle will replace it. Then, politicians that do something will be challenged by critics demanding that policies actually add up to realistic solutions. When decision makers, after delaying for so long, suddenly try to find a shortcut to realistic action, climate change is likely to be securitized. Professor Weaver, who first coined the term securitization, says more abrupt change could potentially threaten democracy. The United Nations Security Council could, in principle, tomorrow decide that climate change is a threat to the international peace and security, he said, and then it's within their competencies to decide, and you are going to do this, you are going to do this, you are going to do this. This is how we deal with it. Professor Weaver says, despite, quote, overwhelmingly good arguments, close quote, as to why action should be taken on climate change, not enough has been done. And he says that could eventually lead to a greater risk of armed conflict, particularly in unstable political climates. Imagine these kinds of fires that we are seeing happening in Australia, in a part of Africa, or Southeast Asia, where you have groups that are already in a tense relationship with different ethnic groups, different religious orientations, he says. And then you get events like this, and suddenly they are not out of each other's way. They'll be crossing paths, and then you get military conflicts by the push. He isn't the first expert to warn of the security risk of climate change. Chris Berry, former Defense Force chief and honorary professor at the ANU Strategic and Defense Studies Center, wrote in October that, quote, climate change is a threat multiplier. It exacerbates the drivers of conflict by deepening existing fragilities within societies, straining weak institutions, reshaping power balances, and undermining post-conflict recovery and peacebuilding, he wrote. And current Defense Chief Angus Campbell has warned that increasing incidences of climate change-related natural disasters could stretch the capability of the ADF. Professor Weaver argues that delayed action will lead to more drastic measures. The longer we wait, the more abrupt the change has to be, he says. So a transformation of our economy and our energy systems might have been less painful if we had started 20 years ago or 30 years ago. If we have to do that in a very short time, it becomes extremely painful. He says classifying climate change as a security issue could justify more extreme policy responses. That's what happens when something becomes a security issue. It gets the urgency, the intensity, the priority, which is helpful sometimes, but it also lets the dark forces loose in the sense that it can justify problematic means, he says. The urgency, he says, could lead to more abrupt action at an international level. If there was something that was decided internationally by some more centralized procedure, and every country was told, this is your emission target, It's not negotiable. We can actually take military measures if you don't fulfill it. Then you would basically have to get that down the throat of your population, whether they like it or not. A bit like what we saw in Southern Europe with countries like Greece and the debt crisis and so on. Yes, it was indeed shoved right down their throat. The people had nothing to say about it. There were decisions that were made for them, and then they just had to have a more or less technocratic government to get through it. Isn't it interesting that the good professor states that yes, it was a technocratic government, a government by experts, a government by scientists and engineers that decided how the problems of society would be solved. So the ultimate solution, if it ever gets that far, would be for the United Nations to send out troops to enforce its quotas on climate change. This would be a new level of peacekeeping forces, wouldn't it? The last story involves China again. You will remember last year that there was a scientist in China who claimed that he had created a pair of GMO twins, that is, twins that were created by genetically modifying their DNA, ostensibly to prevent the AIDS gene from exposing these children later on to the AIDS virus. And the international community was in outrage against this guy. They said it was completely unethical. He went into hiding, actually, and the Chinese government condemned him as well. Well, he's back, and he's still somewhat of a hero now, not so scorned. I titled this article, Scientists Cite Unintended Mutations in Chinese GMO Babies. Well, guess what? He said that he was going to use the CRISPR technology to tweak the DNA of these babies so that they would not be susceptible to HIV virus. Well, he goofed and he missed. And not only did he not solve the problem that he said he was going to solve, but now he's created unintended mutations. This is exactly what we have been warning about for so long. These scientists think they know something about what they're doing. And when they get right down to it, they get to the bottom of it and they say, oops, sorry. Well, that's easy to say if it's just something that happens that is completely meaningless. But when you talk about two human beings now that are alive for the rest of their days, that's simply not a sufficient answer. I stated at the top of this, in 2018, He Jiankui created a storm of protest when he used CRISPR technology to produce HIV-resistant twins. Now, it appears that he not only failed, but also created unwanted mutations. Other geneticists are calling him a fraud, an idiot, or both. The article states, the gene editing performed on Chinese twins to immunize them against HIV may have failed and created unintended mutations, scientists have said after the original research was made public for the first time. So yes, this geneticist did release papers. He did resurface again. It continues, excerpts from the manuscript were released by the MIT Technology Review to show how Chinese biophysicist He Jiankui ignored ethical and scientific norms in creating the twins Lula and Nana, whose birth in late 2018 sent shockwaves through the scientific world. He made expansive claims of a medical breakthrough that could control the HIV epidemic, but it was not clear whether it had even been successful in its intended purpose, that is, immunizing the babies against the virus, because the team did not, in fact, reproduce the gene mutation that confers this resistance. A small percentage of people are born with immunity because of a mutation in a gene called CCR5. And it was this gene that he had claimed to have targeted using a powerful editing tool known as CRISPR, which has revolutionized the field since 2012. One genome editing scientist at the University of California, Berkeley, told the MIT Technology Review, quote, the claim they have reproduced the prevalent CCR5 variant is a blatant misrepresentation of the actual data and can only be described by one term, a deliberate falsehood. The study shows the research team instead failed to reproduce the prevalent CCR5 variant. While the team targeted the right gene, they did not replicate the Delta 32 variation required, instead creating novel edits whose effects are not clear. Moreover, CRISPR remains an imperfect tool because it can lead to unwanted or off-target edits, making its use in humans hugely controversial. Here, the researchers claim to have searched for such effects in the early stage embryos and found just one. However, it would be impossible to carry out a comprehensive search without inspecting each of the embryo cells and thus destroying it. So we see the fears realized that we've been talking about at Technocracy News and Trends for some time. The scientists and engineers that are involved in these crazy inventions and pushing the envelope of technology, in many cases, simply don't know what they're doing. Well, they'll say they know what they're doing, and then they end up doing crazy things that don't work out. And they say, well, we made a mistake, but what we need to do is go back and do more technology, not less. So we do know in China, in any case, that the gene editing craze is on. There's no stopping it. There will be no stopping it in the future. And what kind of crazy mutations are created may well destroy the lives of the people who they edit. But I have to say again, technocrats invent because they can, not because there's a moral or ethical reason to do so. And this is the case with this scientist in China who created the first GMO babies in late 2018. I'm Patrick Wood for Technocracy News and Trends. See you next time.